from Luke chapter 24. So this is normally a passage that we read at Easter time, but I'm going to read the account of the disciples walking to a village called Emmaus. So I'm going to read from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening, the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It's true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. So as I say, we usually read this passage at Easter. It's an account of a conversation after the resurrection between two disciples, one called Cleopas and Jesus, as the disciples were walking to Emmaus. And it's a fairly long conversation. We're only really given the start of it, you know, the meat of the conversation when Jesus opened the scriptures to them and spoke about himself, referring back to Moses and all the prophets. That's not given to us. You know, we often say that that must have been the greatest Bible study that ever happened. It probably took about 3 hours to walk the 7 miles from Jerusalem to Emmaus, so there was plenty of time to delve into those Old Testament prophets. But we're not given the details of that conversation. We're just given details about the start of the conversation. This apparent stranger walks alongside these two confused disciples. And they were trying to make sense of all that had happened in Jerusalem over the past few days. And he joins in with that conversation. And we see how Jesus skillfully asks questions throughout that conversation. Questions which cause them to reflect and to open up to him. And then ultimately he challenges them and changes them through these questions. You know, Jesus was skilled at conversations. He knew how to ask the right question at the right time. He knew how to move conversations to different levels. You know, we see some of his longer conversations in John's Gospel with Nicodemus, for example, in John 3, and then with the woman at the well in Samaria in John 4. And in each of those conversations, we see Jesus' skill when talking to individuals. So we're going to learn from the questions that Jesus asks these two disciples today. The scene starts with two disciples walking to a village called Emmaus, and it's probably their home village. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. You know, for many people, talking is how they process what happens. Even the most introvert of people will at some point talk to others about their lives. And the events that had taken place in Jerusalem that week had been truly tumultuous. You know, for disciples of Jesus, it must have been bewildering to go from that triumphal entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, where Jesus was hailed by crowds as the Messiah, the Son of David, to those bewildering scenes in Gethsemane on, you know, when he was arrested by the Roman soldiers. And then they had the rush of trials, the horror of the crucifixion. You know, most people, when you're faced with life-changing events, you talk about them over and over again. It's our way of coping. It's our way of processing, of trying to make sense of what is going on. And if you're not that type of personality, it can be hard to understand how talking can be so cathartic. You know, you might say, well, it doesn't really change anything, so what's the point? But most people do find it therapeutic to talk. That's why psychiatrists and counsellors use talking therapies, you know, to help people deal with traumatic events in their lives. You don't always get answers as you talk, but the very process of conversation helps us. We don't feel so alone for a start. We discover how other people think and feel. We find commonality with people as we review events, and people's different perspectives can help us. But I think these disciples really, you know, were just going round and round in circles in their conversation, weren't they? You know, what had happened was just too much for them to take in. They'd not really had time yet to process their shock and their grief at the death of Jesus. And now they're confused because there's talk about him being alive again. And dead people just don't come back to life, do they? So, you know, they were trying to sift everything that they'd been told. And it was all secondhand to them. They hadn't seen Jesus. So they were baffled by what they'd been told. You know, the sources were trustworthy. Other disciples were telling them this. But they still weren't sure how to interpret what was going on. And I think it shows us that people desperately need to make sense, even of what appears to make no sense in their lives. You know, we live in this rational, ordered universe created by God. We need to understand what life's all about. And we need to understand for ourselves. You know, second-hand testimony isn't particularly reassuring to us. You know, we need to know God for ourselves. We need to understand that God loves us and cares for us, you know, for ourselves. Psalm 9, verse 10 says, "Those who know your name trust in you." We've got to know God for ourselves if we're to trust in him. And at this point, Jesus comes alongside the two disciples, but they don't recognize him. And he asks them his first question, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" Now, it's obvious they've been in earnest conversation, but now they've got the opportunity to articulate to somebody else what they're discussing. And sometimes, you know, it's good to talk to a stranger. It's good to talk to somebody outside our situations who doesn't know us, someone who can be objective with us. You know, sometimes we need that outside perspective to help us to see things afresh. So, you know, not every situation has solutions, though. At least not in this life. And perhaps sometimes, you know, that's what talking to a stranger can do for us. It helps us to see, perhaps, where we have to let go of a situation, when we can't change it, we can't come up with an answer. And Jesus' question seems to stop them dead in their tracks. We're told two things, that as they stood still, their faces were downcast, and one of them is called Cleopas. And that's the only place in the Bible where Cleopas is identified. We're never told any more about him, and we're never told who his companion was. But this conversation is probably preached on at least once a year in every church. You know, it's helped countless people to move further towards Jesus in their own journeys of faith. And I think that reminds us that however insignificant we may feel, each one of us as a disciple of Jesus is really important. We can make a significant contribution to history, even if we don't think that that can be the case. You know, often we feel that our lives don't really matter, but the Bible is full of stories of individuals who made a difference. And the fact that we've got Cleopas in this story, just this one-off mention of a man, reminds us that you can't ever write anyone off as unimportant or insignificant, because that's not how God works. Cleopas sounds a bit irritated, maybe even incredulous, as he says, Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened there in these days? You know, he can't believe that the most momentous things that have been happening in Jerusalem could go unnoticed by anyone. Perhaps he's right. But we do have to realise that actually we're not the centre of the universe. Other people may well not know what's happening to us. You know, I'm sure those of you who've been bereaved have experienced that surreal feeling when someone you love has died. Your world has changed irrevocably. And you can't really think of anyone else or anything else, but the world continues as though nothing's happened. You know, I can remember walking out of hospital on the Friday morning when my mum died. We'd been to collect her belongings from the relatives' room, and I was just amazed to see people coming into the hospital laughing and chatting. You know, how? How could they be doing that? You know, didn't they know that my mother had died? Well, of course they didn't. And most of them wouldn't have cared even if they had known, because they didn't know me and they didn't know my mother. You know, we tend to view life most of the time from a very selfish perspective. Yeah, and Cleopas, whose very existence for the past week has just focused on those events in Jerusalem, can't really believe that someone else isn't in the same place. But we have to understand that not everyone is in the same place as us. We can't assume other people understand or even care about us. And that's why all relationships really need conversation, because that's the only way that we have of explaining who we are, what makes us tick, and giving anyone else at all an opportunity to know us. You know, when we talk, we've got the opportunity to share. Others have the opportunity to understand us. Without conversation, we can so easily judge people based on our own limited experience or simply from appearances. And we often end up reaching false conclusions if we do that. And Jesus goes on to say, well, what things? He's probing further with the question. He's giving them the opportunity to talk, to explain, to articulate their thoughts and feelings. And again, we might think, well, that's, you know, pointless. Jesus knows the heart of man. He knows our thoughts. There's nothing hidden from him. But he asks those questions to give us the chance to understand ourselves, to express it ourselves, to let it all out, to unburden ourselves. You know, the good therapist doesn't provide answers as such, but when they ask these questions, they give a person the opportunity to see things differently. You know, some people say, well, prayer's just a waste of time because God's omnipotent, he's omniscient, no plan of his can be thwarted, so, you know, they just feel like puppets, that there's no point talking to God. But prayer's the conversation between two people in love. You know, it's an intimate conversation. And when you're in love, you don't tend to be quiet. You're so thrilled to have found somebody who loves you and accepts you as you are that, you know, you love sharing your innermost thoughts with them and listening to their hopes and their dreams too. You know, being in a relationship means that you share your hurt, your anger, your confusion, or at least that's what you should do in good relationships. And, you know, many of us are afraid to do that in any relationship, let alone with God. But the Bible makes it plain that those kinds of conversations are the very essence of faith. You know, the psalmists model for us those raw, honest prayers where people pour out their hearts to God, even when they're angry with him, even when they feel forsaken or abandoned by him. The communication lines remain open all times. And that's what prayer means. So Jesus' question, what things, it isn't just the question of somebody who's not really interested or who's just going through the motions of being interested. It's the question that he asks all of us because he cares about our everyday needs. The Lord's Prayer, that framework for prayer that he taught his disciples, includes in it prayer for our daily bread. Because God cares about our daily lives. He cares about the ordinary, everyday, boring stuff. And each of us, you know, needs to be real and honest and detailed with God, because he's the best person to talk to, because he really does listen and care. And Cleopas certainly took the opportunity to talk. You know, he summarizes what they've been talking about. He names Jesus of Nazareth. He, you know, says that he was a prophet, he was powerful in word and deed before God and before all the people. He goes on to talk about his death, But then he goes further into their own hopes. We had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. There, in a nutshell, is their problem. Jesus had been crucified. How was a crucified person going to redeem Israel? How was he going to deliver them if he was dead? But then they not only articulated these dashed hopes, and the Bible tells us that hope deferred makes the heart sick. We all know that feeling of, you know, dashed hopes and how disappointed you feel. But they also shared their confusion over what was currently being said about Jesus. You know, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb, but they didn't find his body. They said they'd seen a vision of angels who said that Jesus is alive. And then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they didn't see Jesus. And we can see in just those few verses their confusion and their bewilderment and their disappointment. You know, what Jesus has asked them, they give him not only the facts, but their feelings about those facts. You know, facts can't ever be totally separated from feelings. They were disappointed. They were devastated about Jesus' death. And they were still confused about this idea that he could actually be alive. They didn't understand. The heads were exploding with all that conflicting information and evidence. And maybe you, you know, feel like that sometimes with your life when, you know, we face apparently contradictory and confusing situations and we just don't see how God is going to make sense of it. Now, Jesus' response isn't really very flattering to them because he said, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" You know, he calls them foolish, slow to believe. They had not factored God into the equation at all. That was the real problem. And we're like that so often. You know, we worry, we fret about all kinds of things, but we're often too slow to believe that God can do anything about our situations. You know, God had intervened miraculously in sending his son. His death and resurrection were all part of God's great plan of salvation. And Jesus reminds them that they needed to understand what had happened was already in place in the scriptures. They already had it. It was there in the prophets and the law. You know, we may feel a good deal of sympathy for Cleopas and his friend because, you know, they were living through unprecedented times. But in actual fact, Jesus points them back to the scriptures. If they wanted to know what was going on, it was all there. The suffering servant of Isaiah, the deliverer promised to Moses, the prophets who spoke by the Holy Spirit of things they did not fully understand, it was all there. And maybe, you know, some of us sometimes feel, well, the Bible's got nothing to say about contemporary issues. It's just a history book. You know, it's interesting, but how can it have things to say to us in 2022? What does the Bible have to say about our lives and our governments and our situations? You know, how can this conversation between two disciples and Jesus have any relevance to us today? But if we feel like that, if we dismiss what we hear in church as being irrelevant to how we live our lives Monday to Saturday, then we'll be like Cleopas and his companion. We'll be bewildered and confused and maybe even afraid or despairing. But if we believe that the Bible has the answers to all our questions, then we'll find in it the support, the enlightenment, and the hope that we need to persevere in faith, to endure opposition and persecution, and to overcome. You know, in Revelation, when Jesus is speaking to the different churches, he speaks to each one of them about overcoming, being victorious. So to the church in Ephesus, he says, "To the one who is victorious, I will give you the right to eat from the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God." To the church in Smyrna, he says, "The one who is victorious will not be hurt at all by the second death." To the church in Pergamum, he says, "To the one who is victorious, I will give some of the hidden manna." To the church in Thyatira, he says, "To the one who is victorious and does my will to the end, I will give authority over the nations." To the church in Sardis, he says, "The one who is victorious will be dressed in white." to the church in Philadelphia, the one who is victorious, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. And to the church in Laodicea, he said, to the one who is victorious, I will give the right to sit with me on my throne, just as I was victorious and sat down with my Father on his throne. You know, Jesus had a lot to say to those churches, and there were many words of warning in there, not just encouragement. But to every single one of them, he spoke about being victorious. Paul says, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. In what things? Well, he's been speaking about trouble and hardship and persecution and famine and nakedness and danger and sword, not good things. Christian victory isn't in a world where there are no problems. It's there for us in the real world when the going gets tough. Peter says that God's divine power has given us everything we need for a godly life through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. Now, everything that we need to know, everything we need to live for God, can be found in his word and can be experienced by everyone who seek him with all their hearts. You know, Jesus taught these disciples as he walked with them, beginning with Moses and all the prophets. He explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. You know, if we want to know God and how to live for God and what God's plans are, then we've got to be prepared to get serious about the Bible. It's not just an advent calendar that we open for a few seconds each day to get a chocolate, you know, a nice little verse just to comfort us. We'll never move from confusion to confidence and from despair to delight, from bewilderment to blessing, unless we soak ourselves in those scriptures and allow God to enlighten us by his Spirit. Paul says the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. You know, it's not enough just to know the words. We've got to have that personal connection with God, as these disciples did with Jesus instructing them. And he can instruct us too if we walk with him daily. And the consequence of this conversation was revolutionary for these two disciples. You know, their eyes were opened. You know, ultimately they understood that they had been talking with Jesus, their Lord and Saviour. You know, they weren't talking about the resurrection as being bewildering anymore. They'd experienced it for themselves. They knew that Jesus was alive. And that fact was so transformative that they turned around and went straight back to Jerusalem, because they wanted to share that news with the other disciples. You know, their weariness, their doubt are now gone. And once in Jerusalem, they found that Jesus had appeared to Simon. You know, Jesus can meet each one of us in a personal way. He can ask us his questions and challenge us and lead us from that place of despair to the place of victory. Maybe the circumstances don't necessarily change, but we change because we've been with Jesus. The more we talk to him, the more we spend time with him, the more we dig into his word, the more we understand the eternal nature of life and the spiritual battle in which we find ourselves. You know, it's not always easy to understand what's going on around us, but it's totally impossible to understand it without spiritual eyes. We are a privileged people because we can walk with God and we can have access to his divine nature and his word. And therefore, we can rest secure in the fact that in him, we're more than conquerors and we can be overcomers too. Amen.